afternoon. Welcome back to our community forum. We are live today at the Brigantine Restaurant in Del Mar and having a great time down here. A lot of food. Speaking of the Brigantine, and before we get back to this restoration, the San Dieguito Lagoon restoration, Mike Morton Jr. is with us. His family owns the restaurant and a number of others around town. Second generation restaurant people. Mike Morton Sr. And your mom, I guess, started this restaurant a long time ago.
Yes.
How many restaurants the Morton family have now?
We have 11 restaurants currently operating. We have two under construction, which will be open first quarter 2008. So
wow.
13.
This one was pretty early in the stream, though, right?
Yes. This was number three in the chain and opened in August of 77. So we just celebrated 30 years.
How many? Wow. Boy, there's a... That's, Carl, did you hear that? 30 years they've had this restaurant here? We'll get that in a minute because that was a long time ago, but I remember it well. Now, how many Brigantines are there in that chain?
We have six Brigantines, and the seventh is under construction in Eastlake.
In Eastlake? Oh, yeah, down Chula Vista.
That's right. And then the second restaurant concept is Miguel's Cocinas, and there are three of those. And the third concept is Azul and La Jolla, which is a standalone. Then we have Zocalo in Old Town, which is Nuevo Latino cuisine. We currently have a second Zocalo under construction in Forest Ranch, which we're targeting open date of March.
Boy, that's great. You guys are really busy. Good thing that your mom and dad had some kids. It's not only you. It's your sister, is it?
My sister, she's more of a full-time mom, but she has spent several years of it in here. And
yeah.
She actually managed up here at this location for quite a while.
All you kids were in the restaurant business since early teens.
Everybody except my younger brother, Matt. He escaped to the Navy, so lucky him.
That's one reason to go into the Navy. I'm not going to be doing those dishes. But you've been doing it. You've been working here for a long time.
I have. I legally since I was 16, but I did do some undercover jobs prior to that. But on and off, and did some other jobs outside of the Brigantine, but I enjoy it here.
What are you serving today for folks that come by?
We have quite a spread for you. We have our jumbo shrimp cocktail, our signature crab cakes. We're doing some cheese platters, some other cold and hot appetizers, and I encourage everybody to come on out to the Brigantine. It's excellent.
Mike Morton Jr., thanks for having us here, Mike. It's been terrific to see you and see the say hello to the family for me, too.
I will, Roger, and thank you for being here, and thanks to Mike Furby and Marathon for being here today,
all
too.
Right. Mike Morton Jr., ladies and gentlemen, and the Brigantine. All right. Food pretty good, huh? Now, let's meet not one, but three mayors of the local communities here that are affected by this project. Mayor James Bond is with us from Encinitas, Mayor Carl Hilliard from Del Mar, and Mayor Lisa Huebner from Solana Beach. Let's start with Lisa. Hi.
How are you, Roger?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Say, now, for Solana Beach, what does this project mean? I mean, you're sort of fronting on this thing. Of course, you've got the impact of the racetrack every year and lots of impacts around this. What does this mean to you, this restoration project?
It means a lot to us. First of all, it's been a really long time in the coming. And so we've been looking forward to this beautiful visual, this open natural space for a long time. You know, it's important, too, to know that we've got an area that's flood control and a place that's going to be fisheries for young fish. So in the nurseries for them. It's, to us, it's really going to be a place to come to enjoy. Every time we drive down the freeway to get home, we get this to look at. So it's kind of a nice breath of fresh air, a breath of nature out inside of our beautiful Solana Beach.
I think what you mean is it's a barrier between those people south of you, is it?
I don't necessarily mean it's
I think it's going to be a moat, basically.
I think it's a draw between the two of us.
It's a draw, exactly right. All right, no, I think that the Solana Beach people have to be looking on this again with some feeling of finally this is going to happen.
Beth. How many years has this been, 30?
I think it's 13 since they agreed to it or something like that, they just told me. That they've been working on it, maybe 15 since they got the permit or some such thing.
But there was talk about it, I think, even when
years ago. Because, for a long time ago, and we'll talk to Carl in a minute, out here, Del Mar has always been concerned about this lagoon in the back area here and what the restoration would be and what the impacts would be on it. And particularly with the fairgrounds and encroachments of various kinds that are going on.
There was talk about this being a development, Venice in the South or something. They had some strange name about that. They were going to develop this area.
All right. Well, I'm glad that didn't happen. Okay. So, Lisa Huebner, Solana Beach Mayor, thank you. Let's talk to Carl Hilliard. He's Mayor of Del Mar. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing good, Roger.
How long have you been on the City Council?
I've been on the City Council for 3 years.
And you're already mayor?
Well, you get to be mayor after two.
Oh, after two. So you rotate through, right?
They rotate through.
So when no one else wants to do this job, they point to the new guy.
That's it. The next one up is the mayor.
He's the mayor. Let him take all the heat.
You know about that.
Your guy, I do.
You know a little something about politics.
I do. And I tell you what, when I first saw this plan, I thought, wow, Del Mar is going to get a terrific impact because as they dredge, this sand is going to go right out on your beach. Perfect.
Hopefully it will go out on the beach and it will.
Oh, you think it's a doubt? Because Marathon said they're going to put it on your beach. I hope you're ready.
I hope it stays there. You know, the sand has a habit of going out to sea. And
that's another story. That's right. But at least you get some for, you know, out there.
We'll get some at the beginning.
That's just great. And, of course, they're going to have to do maintenance dredging, and I think that's what will happen is it will continuously, as the natural process if we had floods would have done anyway, right?
Well, we used to have floods back in days when my grandfather lived here. He had the horse riding stable where the fair is now, and they got flooded out with great regularity.
Your grandfather came here when?
He came here in 1929 to buy a beach cottage and never went home.
Where was home at the time?
Redlands.
Well, no wonder he never went home. That was an easy decision.
it's nice. It's by the mountain, orange trees.
And you know what? Aren't you happy he did stay here?
I am. It's a great place to be able to come during my childhood days. And growing up, I had a week or two every summer down here in Del Mar.
Yeah, what a great thing. Well, Carl, thank you for being here. What do you think the benefits are other than the beach sand for Del Mar?
The benefits, there are just a number of benefits, and I couldn't list them all, but one of the main benefits is it's the beginning of the beach to the mountain trail, and it will allow people to come and visit the lagoon and to see nature and to observe the birds and begin the walk to the mountains. I think it'll be just a tremendous asset, not to just Del Mar, but to the entire San Diego region.
Carl Hilliard, mayor of Del Mar. Let's talk to James Bond. Jim Bond is the mayor of Encinitas. Mayor, now Encinitas is one hike up north of here, but you feel like there's benefits from this thing to your folks, too.
Well, it is, and it also is a great project, and it's one that I think you could move a little farther north and do the same thing in the Santa Leo Lagoon. We think this is the right way to do things. As you pointed out, you dredge the lagoon, you move the space, you move the sand, goes on the beach. It really can be a symbiotic relationship where we can fix the environment, fix the coastal issues, and fix even our transportation. We developed a grand plan for the Santa Leo Lagoon in the hopes of elevating the railroad track and 101 on trestles, and then we could cul-de-sac the old 101 and make a great area for people to get to the beach, and the sand could get straight out to the beach, and you'd fix the problems in the lagoon that they have. So
with a little more tidal action back.
A little more tidal flushing that isn't there right now. As you know, the inlet is far north, and it has to make two 90-degree turns before it gets to the ocean.
Right.
So Santa Leo Lagoon Conservancy continually opens the lagoon mouth, and we lose all that sand. It drops out of suspension before it makes a two 90-degree turn.
So what we need to do is get SDG&E to put a nuclear plant out here, and then they'll mitigate it by restoring your lagoon. I don't think Jim Bond can say that in public, can he?
Don't get me into that one. We just
all right.
want the lagoon fixed
sure.
in the right way for environment, and we can fix a lot of other things with it as well, not to mention the beaches and the lagoons are a terrific economic engine. They really are.
Oh, that's a great thing to see out here, and I'm just going to be thrilled when this is done, too, just to drive by. As you're driving by, you know, the average speed out here on I-5, which is about 17 miles an hour, I think, in a good time. That you'll be able to see something interesting as it's taking an hour to go from, you know, the merge up to Solana Beach. Anyway,
one
James,
more
go ahead.
Thing. I'm so glad that you're giving this some airtime.
Yeah.
Because I've had thousands of questions from people. What are they doing down there? They're moving all that dirt. They're doing all this. Are they going to build apartments? Are they going to build nuclear plants, whatever? So,
yeah.
Thanks a million. We appreciate it.
No, happy to be out here. And I'll tell you, that's exactly what happened to me because I started getting email. Are they putting a shopping center down there? You've got to get on this and fight. You know, and I said, oh, wait a minute. I don't think it's bad. I think it's good. And this is why another reason I wanted to do it today, too, is not only to answer people's questions about what's going on out there because they see a lot of earth being moved around, but also to say to people, you know, it is possible for us to restore and enhance the natural environment. It isn't necessary for the natural environment to continue to degrade. We can make it better.
going to make it all better together.
That's right. So I'm trying to just say, you know, here's something we ought to really be proud of, that after all of the, you know, we've been beaten around the head and shoulders by how bad we are for the environment, but the truth is that we are not only cleaning up our act in San Diego County in so many ways, but we're also going back to restore and enhance, which is the key, I think. And so this is what this project means to me. And I think it sets a sample example, as you guys have been talking about, for a lot of other places that can do the same. I hope they do. I hope they do.
Exactly. Basically, we really are all environmentalists in the end. And unless and until we can figure out how we can do this in kind of balance and harmony, which I think this project does, we're probably going to continue to say who's for this or against that when we ought to be fixing it all.
Absolutely. All right, James Bond, Mayor of Encinitas, Carl Hilliard, the Mayor of Del Mar, and the Mayor of Solana Beach, Lisa Huebner. Thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it. All right. Now, we are going to take callers, 1-800-600-KOGO, 569-TALK, 569-8255. And Glenn Erath standing by here.
Yeah, I'm just amazed, like he was saying, we have this cooperation between politicians, utility companies, developers. It's kind of like we are the world.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. There comes a time when a utility company and a developer do something good. Southern Cal Edison and Marathon Construction, you've set the example. We always knew you could. This must mean it's the end of the world. It's now upon us. Dick Cheney's now a gangster rapper. OJ's being honest. No tax dollars spent on this project, I believe. The Middle East is now at peace and the Muppets breathe. End of the world. Oh, yeah. It's finally here. Catholics are popeless and the Mormon Church is serving beer. There's no clever sign. There's no clear sign that the end is close at hand. I saw a developer placing little birdies in the sand. End of the world. Everybody! It's apocalyptic. The press releases, I suspect, are actually quite cryptic. There must be something here that the naked eye can't see. Underneath the sand, I bet you there's a mall and a KFC.
Glenn Erath, ladies and gentlemen.
The Roger Hedgecock Show is on the air.
AM 600, Coco.
And welcome back to our community forum. We are live at the Brigantine Restaurant, the corner of Via de la Valle, and the old 101 Camino del Mar, right off of I-5. Just go, you know, if you're going to the racetrack, just get off at Via de la Valle and come west to Camino. And, you know, before you go in the ocean, turn left. We're right on the corner, Brigantine Restaurant. Now, Hani Elwani is here, Dr. Elwani, who does this coastal environment stuff. Dr. Elwani, welcome to the program. Welcome to the program.
I don't hear.
Welcome to the program.
Oh. He heard me.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay, let me ask you.
Yes.
What kind of studies, what is your role in this project?
Sure. My role in this study is really looking for the hydrodynamics of this lagoon and the sedimentations of the lagoon. As you know, as the water comes in and out of the lagoon from the tide, it deposits sediment in the inlet of the lagoon, which is the entrance of the lagoon. And my involvement here to estimate how much effort we can put to keep the lagoon inlet open for the tidal flushing most of the time.
Because it will have to be dredged to keep
it
open.
It has to be dredged.
Yeah. Now, also in the back of this, east of I-5, I see there's lots of ponds and a lot of earth moving in there. What's that all about?
That's very important. That's what we call them tidal basins.
Okay.
And the tidal basins are very important because when it comes at high tide, it fills the lagoon with water. And at low tide, this water, which has been accumulated in the lagoons, goes out from the lagoon. And as coming out of the lagoon, it flush the sediment which is accumulated in the inlet. But also the tidal basins are very important because this is where we can enhance the lagoon by having habitat in the lagoon, like in pickleweeds, cord grass.
But I was just going to say, this is a habitat also for the birds and fish and animals.
Yes, birds also have prefer some type of habitats than the others. So different type of birds prefer different type of habitats. And therefore, we slope the lagoon basins differently, such it allows that different type of habitats will grow in the lagoon.
Because different grasses and things will grow at these different elevations, right?
That's correct. Exactly. Because different types of species grows with different type of vegetation.
That's very interesting. Now, Howard Chang is sitting next to you. Doctor, welcome to the program. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Now, you're a specialist in what area?
I'm a hydrologist and river sedimentation engineer.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, you see, we are dealing actually a river project, much more a river project than a coastal engineering project.
That's right.
And because the project is basically in the river channel, we are modifying the river channel. We want to make sure whatever we do will meet 100-year protection standard.
So in other words, in addition to all of this about habitat and in addition to the tidal flushing and all that, you're also concerned that this periodically floods here.
Well, of course, this river would flood frequently. And we are designing the project based upon 100-year standard. 100-year flood is the design standard. And the project should survive the 100-year flood. Now, in addition, the project should have no adverse impacts from any measures, many aspects. For example, the project will not raise the existing flood level. The project will not increase the existing velocity at all the infrastructures.
Right.
We cannot increase the scour depth.
Right.
At all the bridge crossings.
Yeah, because the freeway is dependent on you not doing that.
You very much so.
Yeah.
We also have other bridges further downstream, Jimmy Durante,
right.
101, the railroad bridge.
We want to keep all those.
We want to have no adverse. We must not increase the scour depth
right.
at those crossings.
Right. So you're sure now that this project is not going to do any of that bad stuff?
Well, we make sure the project will not cause additional scour.
All right. So in other words, that'll protect it from.
Yes.
Now, when you say 100-year flood, you mean the flood that's likely to occur every 100 years.
The probability is once every 100 years.
Yeah. Now, of course, every once in a while we get a flood bigger than that, but we'll have to deal with that when it happens.
Well, then we consider that to be the act of God.
That's right. Beyond the scope, right, of the project. Yeah.
The national standard is 100-year flood.
100-year flood. So you're confident this project will be able to absorb a 100-year flood, and right now, of course, we're in a drought, and still maintain the integrity of this lagoon.
You bet. There's another very important consideration. You see, San Diego River is a major sand supplier for beach sand of area beach. And we make sure the project will not reduce the beach sand supply for the area, because any reduction of the beach sand supply can threaten the beach from the homes.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
Well, in fact, I heard you talking about this some years ago.
Yep.
You see, the little drift, the sand supply is very essential to maintain, the well-being of the beach.
Dr. Howard Chang, thank you for being here. I appreciate very much. Hani Elwani, thank you for being here. I'm Roger Hetchcock. We're on the Brigantine, and we're talking about the restoration of San Diego Lagoon. Your calls, too, at 569-TALK, 569-8255 after this. Good afternoon. Welcome back to our community forum today at the Brigantine. If I could just talk, it would be fine. We're here overlooking, and what a beautiful sunset it is as you look back in this river valley, which is being restored. We're talking about this all day today, the San Diego Lagoon restoration effort. And a lot of nice people have been dedicating a big portion of their lives to this happening. So that if you're on I-5, and I see you out there going 4 miles an hour, if you're on I-5 going north or south, you can, take a look toward the east and even to the west, and you'll see this restoration ongoing. All that earth moving out there doesn't mean there's more development coming. It means there's more habitat development coming for the birds and the fish and all of that. Kind of a La Costa for the natural environment is going to be built out here. Anyway, we're going to talk to some people about all of that. People have been involved in the details of this. Bill Haas is with us. Varinus is the name of your company, right?
That's right.
I finally got it. Okay. And you're talking about birds.
Our primary job is to basically fulfill the permit requirements that govern how the construction occurs within the project area. So the most sensitive species that we're dealing with are all bird species. And just for information, Pete will be also dealing with the plants, which we tend not to deal with. So we're vertebrate specialists.
Yeah, so you're talking about birds.
Right.
So the answer to the question is yes.
Yeah, for most
life. I just thought we'd finally get to it. Okay, so you handed me a brochure which has a way more birds than I thought. How many birds are we talking about that you hope will find a home here?
Well, this species list collected only since the beginning of this project numbers about 130 species. And the woman sitting to my left is the primary field monitor, Kimberly Bender, who amassed that list and worked with me to prepare that checklist for you.
Okay, Kimberly, hi. Welcome.
Hi.
Now, have you seen all these birds out here?
Yes, I have.
Already? I mean, there's no habitat yet. I mean, there's bulldozers and dirt and stuff.
That's right. Yeah, well, we started the surveys several months before the construction started, so.
Now, how many of these are actually native species to this area? Some of them look like they're imported.
Nope, they're all native.
Native. The mallard is native to this area?
Yes.
See, I learn something new on this show every single day. Okay, so all of these are natives to San Diego County?
That's correct.
And you would expect to find them if they like the place. You'll find them here. If they don't like the place, of course, you won't find them.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
If they like the place, they're going to be here. They're going to come
right back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do again? You watch for these birds?
Yep, I'm the biological monitor. I'm out there once a week. And doing surveys for the birds and watching the limits of work construction.
Now, how many birds have been hardy enough to actually live here through the construction? This is like living in your home while remodeling.
That's right. Quite a few. A lot of those on the list are migrants. They come through in the spring and the fall. But we have quite a few that actually nested out there.
Well, that's very cool. That's very good.
Let me add one of the primary species of concern for the project is a native non-migrant that actually lives in the habitat that's going to be created for this project, and that is the state-listed as endangered Belding's savannah sparrow. One of Kimberly's primary projects for monitoring is to make sure the construction stays away from their habitat, but also monitors their breeding behaviors, because permit requirements say that the construction company cannot work within a certain distance of these birds during their breeding season.
So they are living here while we're trying to remodel.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a restriction on some of them moving around.
Exactly.
Interesting stuff. All right. Now, you mentioned Pete Tomsovic. And Pete, you're doing what on this project now?
Well, I work for a company called Recon Environmental, and we are growing the plants and will eventually be planting the plants in the restoration areas once they're built.
So as I've been talking about the hydrology, the water part of this, the water's going to come in, go out, and with the tide, it's going to flood, the river's moving around. There's a lot of moving parts here. You're going to basically find some elevations are good for some plants and some elevations are other plants, right?
That's exactly correct.
So how do you figure that out?
Well, the scientists that were behind the design of this project know which species occur in which tidal regime or elevation, and
which ones the birds are going to like.
Exactly.
And the other animals. Now, are you growing some of these plants somewhere before you plant them over here?
Yes, we are. Recon owns a native plant nursery, Recon Native Plants, and we're going to be growing about 350,000 container plants for this project.
Wow. Wow. Now, how are you going to guard against, you know, invasion? We were talking about all these native birds, but not a lot of native plants. A lot of invaded plants came in from a whole bunch of other places because we brought them all in. What are you going to do about that?
Well, because this project is going to receive tidal inundation, that's going to be salt water or brackish water coming in, and a lot of the native, non-native plants that we're most familiar with are upland plants. And so just by the nature of the project site being a wet area, it's going to prevent a lot of those non-native species from infiltrating into the project site.
Some upland areas over by Via de la Valle and so forth are going to be left, though. You're going to do weeding out? They're going to weed out the old invasive species or what?
They're going to be hydroseeded with a native seed mix.
Okay.
And be restored into coastal sage scrub type habitat.
Okay, because you can't even let the mustard plants or any of those go in there, right? I mean, those are not native.
Correct.
Okay, so you got this. You're going to police this thing, right?
Yeah, we are professionals in this.
We're professionals. Don't try to do this at home. Yeah, I know. All right. No, that's good. I wanted to get that on the air. Now, Jackson Underwood is with us as well. He's an archaeologist. Jackson, how are you?
Howdy, Roger.
Glad to be here.
Let me ask you, though, as they're moving all this dirt around, I was trying to pick this up with Mr. Furby, and he diplomatically sidestepped it. But, you know, while you're pushing around a lot of dirt, you're going to be digging up a lot of stuff, not only from maybe the pioneer era here, but thousands of years before that. People have been here for a long time. What have you unearthed out there?
Well, yes, we have sites in San Diego County that date to a little over 9,000 years ago.
Yeah.
This whole area was surveyed for archaeological and historic materials before the onset of the construction grading, and there were 18 archaeological sites discovered out here.
Now, what does an archaeological site mean? A campfire?
Well, it's the remains of a hearth with some artifacts. Usually, in this environment, you have stone tools, flaked stone tools like arrowheads. Archaeologists call them projectile points. We have groundstone materials like matates and manos that the prehistoric Indians used to grind seeds and pound acorns, that kind of thing. And they had pottery here. The Southern California area is the only place in California that had pottery, along with the desert areas. So the Indians here had pottery prehistorically, too. And, in fact, that kind of pottery is still made down in Ensenada by the Pai Pai people.
Now, so you found some of the shards and so forth?
Yes, indeed. And all those sites were discovered during a systematic walkover of the area. We call it an archaeological survey. And you you string out archaeologists like a chorus line, and you walk across the country, and you record the archaeological sites that you find.
Now, did you dig all that stuff up?
In this case, they did testing, archaeological testing, which is a limited amount of excavation. And what you do in that process is try to evaluate the significance of the site, how much information it could contain to help contribute toward the resolution of archaeological questions, that sort of thing. And all these sites were determined to be not significant. So what we're doing now...
Now, what do you think they were? Were they just kind of hunting camps?
Yes.
So they're not really villages.
No, they're not villages.
Yeah.
There were some significant villages all along the coast here, but none in this particular patch of real estate. So these were all temporary camps where folks lived for a very short time, like a weekend campsite, and they were go out and do some hunting or gather some plant resources.
Yeah, they came out here to kill those birds.
They may have, indeed. They may have. It may have been a picnic spot.
Yep.
That kind of thing. So these sites were found to be not significant. Now what we're doing now is monitoring in certain areas here. There's a high likelihood of archaeological materials being subsurface. That is not visible when you walk around, but they may be discovered during the grading process.
Well,
so
because there's been floods. I mean, this
table
has changed in 9,000 years, and probably
seriously.
Many feet down there would be the surface of some ancient riverbed, right?
Indeed. Maybe 9,000-10,000 years ago, the coastline was several miles offshore, probably, or maybe a mile offshore, some distance anyway. So this would have been an inland river valley, and people living on the banks of that river 9,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago would have been those areas were probably subsurface now and not visible during an archaeological survey. You couldn't see them.
So you're watching as they bulldoze.
We are.
Indeed.
That's exactly the process. We're doing that.
Anything come up?
Unfortunately, not a lot. We found a few matates. Matates are slabs of stone on which the prehistoric Indians and the historic Indians ground grass seeds primarily.
Right.
Food implement. We found a few things like that. But in general, we're still hoping for some really early sites along some of the drainage areas and that sort of thing. But we come out and monitor very carefully in the areas where our predictive model suggests there's a large likelihood for archaeological materials.
All right.
And the goal of all this is really to contribute to our understanding of how the Indians lived here thousands of years ago and hundreds of years ago.
I want you to find one under the Golden Arches sign over there so we can take that down. That'd be my preference along the shopping center there that's already along the Delvai. Okay, so now, and you've concentrated on Native American stuff, but... Is there any stuff that you've unearthed that's been interesting, like World War II stuff or pioneer stuff?
There wasn't any pioneer stuff. There is an old World War II airfield, and that was studied before the onset of the project and before the involvement of recon. We're now just conducting the monitoring.
Okay.
But there were several other companies involved earlier in the planning process to do the archaeology on the airfield. and also the prehistoric sites that were located out in the mostly in the upland area.
Okay, interesting stuff. Jackson Underwood with us, the archaeologist, and I appreciate your being here. And I appreciate all your folks and the work you're doing. And obviously the work you're doing is something we're going to see unfolding over the coming months and years, I guess. Well, thanks for being here. All right, I'm Roger Hitchcock, and we're going to let's listen to a little music before we take our break. All right, Glenn Erath.
Yeah, you know, the archaeological dig, it's amazing. They found a house that was $250,000. It was about 9,000 years old.
Yeah, that was. That's back when that price was there.
I used to live in San Diego. Man, I love this place. It's a great place to go, great place to be. We used to run around naked up here when I was a kid. Well, when I was just a little boy, living on the San Diego Lagoon, my papa says, son, with all that's being done, this lagoon is gonna be gone soon. But it's not. Look, it's a good thing. Now, very happy tune. Well, I can remember before I-5, running through the fairgrounds bare. Naked in Del Mar, I was running, not a car in the world around me, I don't care. Yeah, I was running on the beaches bare. Born in San Diego, grew up on taquitos, I was wearing no Speedo. Lot of people living here in Southern Cal, yeah, that creates a lot of demand for freeway lanes, electricity and trains. Yeah, we need a comprehensive plan to restore the beaches, yeah, we can. Everybody, come on. We were born in San Diego. Listen to that crowd. I was raised on taquitos. Couldn't even afford a Speedo. Oh, no, no. Yeah, there it is.
The Roger Hitchcock Show continues.
AM 600, Coco.
Welcome back to our community forum. We are live today at the Brigantine Restaurant in Del Mar. That is Via de la Valle and Camino Del Mar at the old 101. The coaster going by. Well, this one actually has people in it. I like that. Since we're paying through the nose for this thing, at least it should be more than just moving scenery. 1-800-600-KOGO, 569-TALK, 569-8255. The mayor of San Diego joins us, Jerry Sanders, live in Del Mar. There he is.
Hey, Roger. When's the first race? I keep looking down on this racetrack.
You can see the racetrack. It's kind of neat.
I know.
This is why this restaurant does well. I mean, if you don't want to go through that mob down there at race season, you can come up here. But I'll tell you, it's nice to see you kind of north of your normal habitat.
Well, this is quite a bit north of where I normally get, especially at this time of day. So
right.
It's beautiful up here. I'm happy to be up here.
We have been talking about this San Diego Lagoon restoration effort. And again, sort of the theme of the show has been that it isn't always the case that we're degrading the environment, that things are getting worse in the environment. We can and should, and I think in this case are doing things to make the environment better, to restore, to enhance. This is the kind of thing that we've been kind of touting what they're doing here that really I hope we see. I mean, are we going to see this in San Diego?
Well, you know, this is a perfect example of a great public-private partnership where you have mitigation money that comes into a project that's embraced by several cities and by the environmental community and also by business. It's a great example. 75% of this is actually in the city of San Diego.
It is. No, see, I didn't know that.
Right. And it's 160 acres that adds up with everything else that's been done to 440 acres of beautiful wetlands that people will enjoy as they drive by. They'll see birds. They'll see other things down there. So it's a great project.
So here you are, actually, you're reminding me that this area to the east of the city of Del Mar is actually in the city of San Diego, and that that's what we're looking at over there on that hill, or the Carmel Valley and other developments that kind of come up this way at the east, to the east of I-5.
This really is what's going to form the northern boundary of the city of San Diego, along with the other cities around here. And what a great way to actually look at a boundary is when you see habitat like this that really defines that boundary and lets people know what a beautiful area this is.
We had the three mayors, Del Mar, Solana Beach, and Encinitas, on earlier, and I chided them a bit. I said, I think what you're trying to create here is a moat between North County and the city of San Diego.
Tell them it won't work.
And they didn't deny it, by the way, so I just... Because a lot of this water, of course, is restoring areas that had been just mud flats or just dirt, and now is being restored to more historically the kind of wetlands, the lagoon areas. even to the east of the freeway, that will really be water feature.
Well, and it, you know, this is an opportunity in each of these marsh areas that we have up and down the coast to actually build habitat like this, restore it, clean up and mitigate, but allow other things to happen because of that mitigation. So I think it's a great deal all the way around.
Well, I hope you'll be actually, as this, we were talking about the vision of going from Del Mar at the coast here all the way to Vulcan Mountain by Julian, and this would be one large park for hiking and so forth back and forth. There'll be a lot of parts of the city of San Diego that will be involved there as well.
Well, they would, and then also the San Diego River Conservancy in the middle of San Diego would have exactly the same type of trail system going up to the same spot, so you could do it in several different ways, and it'll be a unique feature for our kids when they get older.
Now, you're busy. I mean, you started. What time did you start this morning?
Got my pickup at 6:15.
6:15. And you're going tonight until?
Until about 8:30. It's good for me. It keeps me out of trouble.
Yes, because after 14 hours, you're just going to go home and go to bed. I can see that.
That's exactly right.
There's going to be no Pink Floyd in the middle. There's going to be no movies. You're just going right to bed. But in those 14 hours, wasn't this your most pleasant stop?
I mean, well, this is, you know, this should be at the end of everybody's day because it is absolutely gorgeous here and a great crowd to boot.
Well, I do want you to look out, however, at one of the features of this landscape, which is I-5, where the average speed right now is about 4.5 miles an hour. If there's anything you can do to hasten the widening of I-5 up here by Solana Beach, don't we need this a little wider? Or are all you guys just trying to narrow it?
Well, they actually started widening at Solana Beach. It's the first one that B bond money went for, and I was with the governor up there about a month ago where they announced the widening was going to start, and it'll go all the way from here where we bring 12 lanes of traffic into about 5 and into 4, but it'll go all the way up to Oceanside, and that's in the plan. It's kind of what they're calling the accordion plan, where they'll keep spreading out, and soon we'll have more lanes of traffic so that you can get through there without this bottleneck right here.
I think that's terrific. Well, Mayor Jerry Sanders visiting with us. I appreciate your being up here.
Roger, thank you very much.
Thank you. Jerry Sanders, setting. Ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be back. I'm Roger Hedgecock, live at the Brigantine after this.
Jazz Thursdays with me, David Petrone, at the restaurant at Stingeree. Visit stingsandiego.com.